Ksuvas Perk Yud Aleph, Mishnah Dalet 11:4. And the Mishnah continues to discuss cases where a widow, the Almana, sells assets that have fallen to her late husband's heirs in order to get money to fulfill the obligations of her Ksuba. So our Mishnah here wants to discuss what happens if she doesn't get exactly the right price. So the first, there are really three separate cases. The first is Almana Shahaisa Ksubasa Masayim. Let's say you have a woman who her ksuba payment was 200 zuz. That's the standard payment for a woman who's never married before. Umachra. And she sells a piece of property, as she's allowed to do, as we've seen in the previous cases, shavamane b'masayim. She sells a piece of property that's worth 100 zuz, but she gets 200 zuz for it. So the lach will be niskabla ksubasa. She has received her ksuba payment. She was owed 200. She got 200. Even though it's true that the piece of land that she sold is only worth 100, so kind of the winners here are really the heirs of the estate, the Yorshim, but that doesn't matter. She got what she was entitled to and nothing more. And the Gemara makes a sort of analogous to a person who appoints a shaliach. Let's say I make you my shaliach, I give you, 10 shekels, I say, go buy me a loaf of bread. You go to the store, and you find that bread's on sale, it costs, $5. So 5 shekels, I should say. So you come back, with a loaf of bread, and of course the change doesn't belong to you, the shliach, it belongs to me, because it's my money. So that's what the Gemara says it's analogous to over here. Just because she got a deal doesn't mean that the people who are entitled to own the money now don't get their money back. So while the analogy isn't exactly perfect, because in one you got a seller, when you got them being the buyer, the important takeaway message of the Gemara is that we are treating the widow as if she were a shaliach, an agent on behalf of the heirs. And the reason why is because, remember, they have an obligation to pay her out of her ksuba. She's like a senior creditor, if you will, because she has a lien on all her assets. So the Beis Din is saying she's allowed to act and sell property to get money to pay off her ksuba. So it's as if she's acting on their behalf to liquidate some of their assets to get her the money that she's entitled to. That being the case, if she gets a good deal, she still gets her just 200, and the extra land that wasn't sold, if you will, still belongs to theirs. On the flip side, if it's Oshava Masayim Bamana, she took a piece of property which, in the fair market conditions, would have fetched a price of 200 zuz, which would have satisfied her ksuba, but she only gets 100 for it. Still in this kabla ksubasa, still she is considered to have been paid off her ksuba. The reason why is because even though she got just 100 zuz, the person who caused her not to get her full amount is herself. She caused her own loss because she took a 200 zuz asset and only got 100 zuz for it. The loser is her, and they've fulfilled their obligation to her, and nothing more she can collect. That's the first case. Now the second case says, Haisa ksubasa mane. The Mishnah changes the case to say that we're talking about a woman who didn't have a ksuba of 200, but rather a woman who had a 100 zuz payment, dinar payment, in her ksuba. That's the other standard amount, of course, for a woman who had been married for the second time when she got married under this ksuba here. Now, there's no relevance to the change in number. It's just illustrating a different kind of case. But the principle is, it doesn't matter how much we're talking about over here. The point is, a woman who's entitled to, let's say, 100 or 200 for that matter, umachra shava mane, she sold a piece of property which was shava mane vidinar, was worth more than the total amount which she was due under her ksuba. So she was owed, let's say, 100, but she sold a piece of property worth 101 dinar, or zuz, b'mane, and she only got 100 for it. That being the case, she got the money she needs for her ksuba, but the problem is she sold something which, she wasn't allowed to sell. And that being the case, michra batel, her sale is annulled. The reason why her sale is annulled is because she had no right, no authorization to sell this tract of land, which was worth 101 for 100, because she only owed 100, so she had no business selling that piece of land in the first place. Therefore, her sale is not valid. Afilu hi omeres, achzir dina liyorshin. Even if she says, listen, okay, I understand I caused you a 1 dinar loss, because I sold 101 for 100, but I'll give you that extra dinar, so I'll make you whole. I'll satisfy that, she says to the heirs. It doesn't matter, michra batel, her sale remains annulled, it's not binding, because she wasn't authorized to make that sale. She can't be a party to that sale, she wasn't allowed to do it, because she wasn't entitled to sell a 101 zuz piece of land. She only owned 100. Now, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel argues on a small point. He says, well, it depends. What does it depend on? If the whole piece of land that she sold, if she would have only sold 100 zuz worth of it, there'd just be a little sliver of land left. And that sliver of land would anyways be useless. Like, it doesn't make economic sense to cultivate a little tiny plot, you know, that's like, you know, two by nothing. It doesn't make a difference. You know, it's too small to make any sense. So in such a case where it's too small to make economic sense on its own, to be its own standalone, you know, field or garden or something, so then the fact that she lumped it in with the sale, she's actually, so to speak, doing them a favor. They wouldn't object to it. And therefore, of course, she has to only take 100 and reimburse them, you know, the difference. But the point is, they can't stop the sale and make it, you know, annulled. Because if you think about the story, what's happened here is this woman went and made the sale, and they basically complained. They said, no, we didn't authorize it. We want to get the field back. So we're saying that her sale would indeed be annulled because they complained. But they can't complain, says Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, if all that they would have been left with otherwise is some essentially economically useless piece of land. That's what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says. La olam, the truth is, michra kayam, her sale is in fact binding. Achate sham kadesha tishayer, unless if she hadn't included that extra piece that she wasn't entitled to sell, enough to be, you know, in its own right, a usable piece of property, which is how much? Besadeh, if we're talking about a field in which you'd grow grain, so then bas tisha kamin, a field big enough that one could plant 9 kav of seeds in it. A kav is a volume, but the 9 kav of seeds, in our Mishnah here, we assume that the kav is basically a 2-liter bottle, so we're talking like 18 liters of seeds. Back in Meseches Kilayim, we learned many times about the base sa'a. The base sa'a was 50 by 50 almost. There are 6 kabin in a sa'a, so it's not, the base sa'a is 50 by 50 or 2,500 square almost. A base kav is a sixth of that, because there's 6 kabin in a sa'a, but we're talking times 9, because talking 9 kav, really it's 1.5 times a base saw, or basically 3,750 square almost, if you're keeping track. That's how big. Uvagina, if we're talking about a gina, meaning a place that's fitting to grow vegetables, like a vegetable patch, those of course are much smaller. Bas chatzi kav, it would be the size of a field in which you could plant half of 1 kav, meaning like basically 1 liter of seeds and grain. That's the equivalent of saying basically a 12th of a base saw, which is basically saying like 208 square amos. Ukadivri Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva held that in Bava Basra elsewhere, that a gina, that a garden is valuable even smaller than that. He says Basrova, even a quarter of a kav of seed that you could plant such an area of that amount. Basically, it's basically 104 square amos. Think of it basically as 10 by 10 amos, 5 by 5 meters, something like that. So that would be, that base rova is enough to be considered useful as a garden for growing vegetables, and therefore, if it's less than that size, says Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the sale would be binding. Halach, however, does not follow Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. It follows the Tanakama, which means if she sold more than she was allowed to sell and didn't get a fair price for it, so then they can say no, it's not binding. As it happens, it's very Sisrael and others explain, if she sold, let's say, 101, and it was indeed, she got the fair price, 101, it wouldn't be annulled because she was entitled to sell the 100, just that last one would be annulled. Okay, now that's the second case. Then we go on to the third case of the Mishnah, and the third case of the Mishnah, first of all, doesn't have any real new chedushim, the truth is, and second of all, it talks about a woman who has Haisek Subasa Arba'a Meos. She has a 400 zuz payment coming to her on her ksuba. Again, we're changing the amount. It's not changing anything in terms of principles here. That's just the other standard amount that ksuba could be, because if you recall, we learned elsewhere that when it came to the kohanos, the daughters of kohanim, so it was not unusual for in certain towns or communities for a girl from a kohen to get a standard ksuba of 400 instead of 200 zuz. If you look again back at the first parak, the fifth mission over there. That being the case, we illustrate with that number here. But again, we're not changing principles here. What we're saying here is, if she sold multiple fields, 100 zuz at a time, so the case is, Haisek Subasa Arba Meos Zuz, U Machra Lezebemana Lezelemana, She keeps on selling them parcels, 100 at a time, v'la achron, and to the last guy, to reach her full amount that she's owed, the fourth hundred, I'll call it, yafa mana v'dinar b'mana. She sold a piece of property worth 101 and only got 100. So then, shel achron batel, that last sale can be annulled, because she wasn't authorized to sell 101 and get a bad deal for it, but v'shel kulan, but for the other 300 that she sold, michron kayam, her sale stands, because she's authorized to do it. It doesn't sound a package. Each sale is separate, and all the previous sales stand. They're binding. Now, really, this is not a chiddush. If you look at the first two cases, we learned two principles. The first principle was, if she doesn't get a fair deal, if she is owed 200 and she sold a field worth 200, even if she only got 100 back, the sale is binding. She's considered to have been paid off with less than the full 200 that she got because she did a bad deal. And the second case we said was that if she sells a piece of field larger than she's authorized to sell, like 101, and she only entitled to 100, then the sale is batel. So those seem to be kind of contradictory. Of course, the resolution is that if the total amount that she sold of the fair market value of the fields didn't exceed the value of her ksuba, then the sale is binding. She suffers a loss. And if the portion of land she sold was worth more in normal market conditions than what her ksuba was due to her, it's annulled. The deal is annulled. So that's what this last case in the Mishnah is illustrating. Again, we're saying the first sales are binding, but the final sale is not binding. And the reason why the Mishnah has to teach that really is because it seems like we're sort of contradicting ourselves, and therefore the Mishnah makes it clear, so you shouldn't get confused. It's very possible a woman could do a series of sales where some are binding and some are not, and even if hypothetically to the first person she sold a piece of field that was worth, let's say, 101 for 100, that would be binding, just she would incur the loss, whereas once she's sold the last field, which has exceeded the total value which she was entitled to in the first place, that sale is not binding. So it's kind of confusing. The Mishnah teaches the case explicitly here, more or less, as well.